Welcome into a brand new episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. I'm your host, Kelsey Conway, here with my co-host, Jason Williams. We are in studio, ready to break down everything that took place in what was one of the craziest games, probably at, well, now Paycor Stadium, but you could say Bengals Stadium, given how everything unfolded. And Jason and I are going to, you know, get right down to exactly what happened, what were some of the events that led up to why the Bengals lost, and where do they go from here. So, Jason, let's just start with now. We've had a day to sleep on the game. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the first reaction, you don't want to overreact over a week one performance, but there were takeaways that are notable and worth talking about. If I had asked you point blank, if you had one takeaway, we'll get into everything else later. If you had one takeaway, what would it be?
Well, my takeaway is what I wrote in my column about, is that the Bengals were not ready to play. And I trace that back to the fact that they were soft in the preseason, and guys didn't do a lot of hitting, and there wasn't a lot of practicing together, or there was almost no playing together in the preseason, no snaps for almost all the first teamers, with the exception of Cordell Volson, who was in the battle with Jackson Carman. Mm-hmm. And I really truly believe, when you look at those first, I know I'm hung up on this, and I know there's all these other things, and they still had a chance to win, and really multiple chances mm-hmm. to win. And I'll get to that in a second. But to me, those first two plays of the game really set the tone and really said this team was not ready to play. The sack where Cameron Hayward just blew up Cordell Volson mm-hmm. right out of the gate. First play of the game for the Bengals offense. Second play of the game, Joe Burrow drops back and just throws a horrible pass. Minkah Fitzpatrick steps in front of it, the easiest interception he's ever going to have, returns it for a touchdown. And I think that set the tone. So we can sit here and we'll nitpick, and everybody does it. You nitpick all these different plays, but you go back to that, and I thought that really set a tone. Now, and early on, you look at those first four or five possessions, and so many problems happened on those, what was there, four sacks and three turnovers, or vice versa there in those first four possessions. And to me, that was a reflection that they were not ready to play. And you saw, though, as the game went on, they still had a chance to win. That, to me, tells me they were a better team. They got a little better as the game went on because, hey, guess what? They were getting some game experience together. Mm-hmm. So the first half was really the preseason game for these guys.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to look at it.
And, you know, but it put them in enough of a hole that it just set them back. And I thought it just set the tone for the day. How about you?
It's really hard for me to pick one, but I think when I look at everything, and I know it's easy to say the seven sacks and the 11 quarterback hits, right? That, to a lot of people, is probably the biggest takeaway. All we talked about all offseason is the offensive line going to be better for Burrow. He's running for his life all the time. Is that going to change? I'm less worried about that, and this might surprise you what I'm more concerned about. If you really sat down and watched every Bengals game last year, outside of the explosive plays from Joe Burrow to Ja'Marr Chase, this offense was a very middle-of-the-pack offense. And I know people listening might scratch their head at me and say, what are you talking about, Kelsey? They finished number 23 in rushing offense. They couldn't really run the ball. Hmm. And they were great in explosive situations and points per game because of those explosive touchdowns to Ja'Marr Chase, but they weren't good in the red zone. And so overall, the Bengals offense, a lot of their issues were covered by the play of Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. So they get a fresh start this year. And the number one thing outside of protecting Joe Burrow better was being better in the red zone. And They were not.
No, they weren't.
Once again, they were 2 of 5, 40% in the red zone. And the biggest concern to me is it's the same deal. And I actually asked Joe Burrow before the season, I said, what has to happen for you guys to be better in the red zone? Does someone need to emerge as the main target? Is it T. Higgins because of how tall he is? Is it Hayden Hurst because he's athletic and he's not going to see some of the coverages that the receivers do? He said, we got to be able to run the ball down there. We have to be able to run the ball in the red zone.
Yep.
They could not yesterday against the Steelers run the ball in the red zone. And outside of that huge run that Mixon had, was a great block by Alex Kappa and Drew Sample. He really didn't, you know, I think he averaged 3 yards per carry. They are completely missing in that area. And I don't know where they go from here in terms of you spent all offseason, you acquired new players, you probably tweaked your scheme some. They've got to be able to run the ball in the red zone because at some point, Ja'Marr Chase is not going to be an available option like he was. And sometimes stuff happens, like T. Higgins getting a concussion, can't miss the game. Tyler Boyd obviously had a touchdown. He had a really good game yesterday. But to me, the biggest concern following the week one game isn't about the hits that Burrow took, isn't about the interceptions. It's that, once again, the Bengals struggle in the red zone and can't run the ball in the red zone when they need to be able to do it. So that would be my biggest takeaway just before we get into the nitty-gritty of exactly what happened.
That's good analysis. And, you know, because I think that there's what you just said there is what a lot of people aren't probably thinking about right now is they're thinking about, you know, the Zach Taylor, why didn't he throw the challenge flag, and mm-hmm. the offensive line, 7 sacks, and they spent all this money, and there's 4 new linemen. And if I could add this to talking about the line, and I know Bengals fans are freaked out right now, and I can't blame them because of so much talk about this line. And what was it like? How many sacks did they give up?
70 last year.
72. It was a 70, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not that worried about the line. There's certainly a red flag and a concern, but I'm not like all out like, oh my gosh, this is, I go back to what I said as my big takeaway was that these guys haven't played together right. yet.
And Cam Hayward up against Cordell Volson. It's just unfair.
Yeah.
Cam Hayward's one of the best defensive linemen that's ever – he's going to be a gold jacket guy. Like, he's one of the best defensive linemen who's ever played the game. And if you don't think Mike Tomlin and Cam Hayward got together and completely game planned to take advantage of the rookie who played at North Dakota State.
That's right.
Not even at one of the premier programs where he would have seen these top-tier defensive linemen that come out of Georgia, which is essentially kind of like playing in the NFL. I mean, come on. Of course they were going to try and take advantage of Cordell.
No,
and that's what they did. And to pin it all on him, yeah, you'd like to see him play better. But, like, that's kind of one of those things where you chalk it up to, like, he's Cam Hayward. And he's been in the league a really long time.
Yep.
And that was Cordell Volson's first regular season game. So to overreact about Cordell Volson would be irresponsible, in my opinion.
I think – you know, the fact that these guys didn't play together, and you know, there's always this talk in football about how team chemistry is so critical for offensive linemen to work together and know what the guy on your left and on your right, if you're a guard and center, are doing. And, you know, everyone next to you like, you got to know what each other are thinking and all the plays and just that whole chemistry, probably more so than any other position group in football. There has to be a chemistry there between offensive linemen, and it's not there yet, and it's not there because, well, that was the first time they ever played together.
Yeah.
And, you know, I put this squarely on Zach Taylor. Yeah, it worked last year. But you look around the NFL, and you look at some teams that did not – they did the same philosophy in the preseason. the Rams being one of them. And the Rams just got absolutely destroyed
by the Bills. Yeah, and the Bills played Josh Allen in the preseason. So,
as in the Steelers mm-hmm. played a lot of their key mm-hmm. players in the preseason as well. They hit in practice. Mm. It is football. I mean, that's the reality. Like, it's that's part of the game.
Yeah.
And I do not like that whole, like, you know, soft approach in the preseason. And I think you saw the result of that last year. And you even think – or that yesterday. But you even think, like, last year. I mean, that was an inferior Vikings team that they played in the season opener and had to go to overtime and mm-hmm. went on what was the field goal, right? Mm-hmm. Last second field goal. I was looking at that last night. I'm thinking, like, well, they got away with it last year in the opener. And then, obviously, you got game experience, so you're off and rolling. They have it now. We'll talk about Dallas on Thursday. Yeah. But if you're a Bengals fan today and you're concerned, I'm not going to be one to sit here and say don't be concerned, because I think the schedule is set up. You can't have too many more games like you had yesterday.
Yeah, and I will say – people need to remember that last year Burrow had like a clunker of a game against the Bears in week 2. He threw 3 interceptions on like back-to-back-to-back plays. Mm-hmm. And he turned out just fine in the season. So, yes, definitely notable, not a good outing for Joe Burrow. And as I tweeted last night, I wasn't allowed in the locker room last year because of COVID, but Joe Burrow did not take his jersey off. He did not shower. He sat. He came to the podium to do his press conference. He was very short.
Yeah.
Didn't really want to talk. And then he went in the locker room when we were talking to the rest of the players. And he sat at his locker. Didn't look at his phone. Just sat there in silence. Hmm. And there was probably, like, when I left, about 3 players still in there. And he was one of them. Hmm. And you could just tell it ticked him off to no end how he played, how that game ended. So knowing Joe Burrow's mental strength, I have no doubt in my mind that he will right this wrong. But he does. That was a big thing that Brian Callahan, the Bengals offensive coordinator, said this year, is that Burrow's got to cut down on his turnovers. At one point last year, he led the league in turnovers, and he cut down significantly in the second half. He can't lead the league in turnovers again this year. He's just too important. The offense just rides him so much that he can't turn the ball over like that. But just my last point on the short yardage goal line stuff. So the Bengals missed on 4 plays from the 1-yard line.
Wow.
You cannot spend your entire offseason and you spend all your money on 3 new offensive linemen. Cordell Volson, you weren't planning on him being the starter, but you knew you don't just draft someone for no reason. You knew at some point he'd be a player for you.
You're going
to
need him.
You can't not be able to move the ball on the 1-yard line into the end zone. Exactly. The Bengals are too good of an offense to have that cripple them all season long. So to go 2 of 5 in the red zone and to have those issues on the 1-yard line that happened a lot last year – that to me is my biggest takeaway and the thing that the Bengals have to get right immediately, because they're too explosive of an offense to be able to move the ball down the field to then get to the 1-yard line and not be able to get 6 points and continue to have to rely on Evan McPherson. It's one thing if, you know, on the 50-yard line and, you know, you're playing a really good defense and you can't even move it past a 52 or 58 mm-hmm. yard field goal attempt for McPherson. But to get to the 1-yard line, you got to be able to punch those in and score touchdowns. And I think if you look at the way the Chiefs played yesterday, if you look at the way the Bills played, even the Chargers, the Bengals are going to have to score touchdowns to win games in the AFC. And I know that's obvious, right? Like, you got to score touchdowns to win. But when you really look at the numbers, 2 of 5 in the red zone and missing on 4 plays at the 1-yard line, that's unacceptable for the Bengals offense. And I'd expect that to be an even bigger, even though it was a big emphasis heading into the season, an even bigger emphasis for Zach Taylor Frank Pollock, the offensive line coach, and Brian Callahan as to how they can get a push up there. And it's a lot of it falls on the offensive line, but Mixon has a responsibility in that too. So I will be very curious to see the changes that the Bengals coaching staff makes to try and find new creative ways to get the ball in the end zone. You saw that little shovel pass they attempted down there on the 1 yard line that got blown up. So that to me, I wanted to talk about on this podcast. So then let's talk about the other major storyline of the game besides some Burrow turnovers and them being terrible in the red zone and not being able to punch it in from the 1 yard line. Let's talk about what happened on special teams, because the Bengals defense was fantastic yesterday. I wrote in my analysis that was available on Cincinnati.com, still is, if you're a Bengals fan, you should feel great about the Bengals defense. I mean, they don't miss assignments. I think that's what stands out to me. Mm-hmm. They might not be the most raw, like, talented group. Like, they don't have a TJ Watt and a Cam Hayward. They have, yes, right. Trey Hendrickson is a really good player. So is Sam Hubbard, and BJ Hill and DJ Reader are really good players. But Cam Hayward and TJ Watt, different players. TJ Watt, I think, is, people talk about Aaron Donald being the best player. TJ Watt's right up there for me, because I just have seen him wreck so many games. They don't miss assignments. They're just on top of it from a communication standpoint. Everybody seems like they're on the same page. And Logan Wilson played really well yesterday. Sam Hubbard, when I went back and watched the game, had a really good game. So I think the Bengals defense, they might take some lumps here and there against a really good passing offense, because I still think on the perimeter is probably where they're going to be exposed most. But I think you're going to feel good about the Bengals defense every time they step on the field. I think they're a really well-coached unit, and I think their defense is full of players who take it really seriously, and that's what you hope for. But the so we're not even going to talk about the defense, because they played really well.
Not much to
Let's talk about the special team situation and what happened with Clark Harris and Mitchell Wilcox and where they go from here. So for those who don't quite understand what happened, Clark Harris, one of the most veteran players on this team, and to be honest, in the NFL, the long snapper, he went out early with a biceps injury, and it could be a very serious injury. But fortunately for the Bengals, they've got a long snapper on the practice squad that they can bring up. But Mitchell Wilcox is the third string tight end. Mitchell Wilcox gets put in the game to be the long snapper. Yes, he does practice that. Zach Taylor said he practices that. Wilcox said, I practice it probably twice a week. So it's not that Zach Taylor didn't have them prepared. They prepare for situations like this. But what things got interesting was after the missed extra point, Zach Taylor and Darren Simmons know way more about what snaps should look like, what that operation should look like, more than you or I or anyone else that doesn't coach football for a living will know. You've got to think they saw that operation go down and said, yeah, that didn't look good. Maybe we should, unless we physically have to kick a field goal, try and go for it more. Mm-hmm. So then that brings up the decision to kick the field goal on third down in overtime, which is a very controversial decision. But after talking to Zach Taylor, you get where he's coming from. So if you're wondering why Zach Taylor opted to kick on third down in overtime, it is because if the snap is too high, Kevin Huber, the punter, can then catch it and clock it. And the Bengals would then still be able to get another play, because it would be fourth down. Whereas opposed to if you go, you have Burrow make a play call, Burrow's throwing the ball on third down, he doesn't get it, then fourth down, you miss if something goes wrong and you miss the kick, then, you know, you're SOL, as we would all say. So that's why Zach Taylor made the decision to kick it on third down. There are some that say, based off what you saw from the extra point operation, why wouldn't you just say we're going to either win or lose with the ball in our quarterback's hand? Like, the special teams operation is just – it's too bad that we don't even want to risk it. Well, Zach Taylor said, I felt comfortable that if it was too high because – I mean, Evan McPherson's a sure bet. Like, it wasn't like they had a shaky kicker too. Like, you've got Kevin Huber, who's one of the most veteran punters, and you have a really good kicker. So he felt that they could, you know, get out of this situation. It's not ideal, but he thought they'd be able to, you know, make up for it. That did not happen, and they didn't make the field goal. So when asked post-game about it.
They don't make the field because the snap, the laces are out.
Yeah.
It's a bad snap.
It was a bad snap.
And then
it didn't get out fast enough. That's the problem. So it threw off the timing. The snap was too high, and it didn't get into Huber's hands.
And then he just throws it down, and it's laces.
Yes.
You know, and then what do you call it? Laces out.
It messes with Evan McPherson. Yep. All of this is timing. So Zach Taylor had his reasons. He gets paid a lot of money to make those decisions. You can second guess it, but he felt good about his operation, and that's basically behind. Would you have gone for it with Burrow on third and fourth down? Are you okay with the decision?
I don't mind the decision, honestly. Like, I think, you know, the punter there has got the timing is off automatically at the high snap. Mm-hmm. So everything is not smooth from there on out. Mm-hmm. So just clock it, try it again.
Yeah. So then
I really don't. I mean, I know Taylor didn't, Zach Taylor did not have a very good day. But that's not one of those decisions that he made that I'm questioning.
Yeah.
Cause I actually like that because you're almost putting a safety net in place there. Oh, okay, we got the emergency long snapper, so let's try this on third down. We got the best kicker in the league. We got a 15-year veteran holder. The 15-year veteran holder, and I'm not, you know, I'm going to sit here and hammer away on Kevin Huber, but, you know, you got to make a better decision there and realize time and down and everything, and it's like just clock it. Live to kick another day, you know?
So one more topic we need to talk about before we move on to the fan questions. The clock management. So this was an issue last year at times for Zach, and it popped up again this first game. The 15 seconds so after the Bengals miss the kick in overtime, the Steelers go down and they miss the kick.
Yep.
The Bengals then get the ball back. And Burrow takes a sack that knocks them out of field goal range, and Kevin Huber has to come on and punt. Well, Zach Taylor should have taken a delay of game penalty and ran that clock as far down. But instead, the Bengals snapped it and gave the Steelers an extra, I think it was either 13 or 15 seconds. I don't have it right in front of me. But if you look at the way that Steelers drive, the ensuing Steelers drive that they ended up winning, they wouldn't have won if they had less than 15 seconds. You know what I'm saying? Like that, those 15 seconds made a huge difference.
You're punting anyway. Why not take the clock down?
Zach's response was, it was a new operation. And to be honest, I was more concerned with basically just hoping that we can get a punt off and not have like a total train wreck of an observation where,
now, hang on, though,
you
on
know, a potential like fumble or something, that he was just more concerned with it being, because it was a new operation, that they just needed to get it off. What do I think that
makes no sense, though, Kelsey? Like, because if it is a new operation, don't you want to take that clock down to as far as you can do, take it down? You give them, whether it is a botch snap and Huber's got to go fall on the ball, it still gives them, wherever they are on the field, they being the Steelers, it gives them less time to do whatever they got to do.
Yep.
So I don't understand that explanation.
Well, so here's the thing. I completely agree with you. Here was Taylor's exact quote. "We snapped there with 13 seconds. I understand that. Trust me, we'd rather do something different. But just trying to make sure the operation ran smoothly. It turned out that we sacrificed some seconds just to make sure that we were all on the same page there."
But you didn't sacrifice enough seconds.
Right? So, yes. I think that that's one of those very teachable moments for Zach Taylor and, to be honest, every other NFL team. Because if you don't think every coach that sits in games – so NFL coaches have game management meetings every week before they go into
a game. And
this was
certainly a thing with Taylor coming out of last year. Yes. Talking about
so,
being better in situational
I guarantee you football. That every NFL head coach in his game management meeting is going to talk about this situation and say, what would we do if we don't have our typical long snapper, punter, kicker in? We are not going to, you know we're not going to not know what to do in this situation. Yeah. And I actually asked Zach about not the clock thing because a lot of people asked him about it, but I said, how often do you in your game management meetings talk about, so what happens when we lose our long snapper and our backup snapper is really struggling? Like, that's probably something, and he said, it doesn't really, we don't talk about it much. It's, I'm being completely honest, it's not something that comes up much. And you can't fault him for it. Now we can sit here and, you know, debate it and like, you know, why doesn't he talk about it? But in reality, that's what made yesterday's game so crazy, is there were unthinkable situations that took place. And yes, he's the head coach and he has to take responsibility for everything. And yes, should they have taken a delay of game penalty and ran that clock down? Absolutely. But to say going into week one, he could have ever predicted they were going to lose their long snapper and that Wilcox wasn't going to be able to get it done. They saw him practice twice a week. You would trust that Zach Taylor would, if Wilcox wasn't doing well in practice at it, they would not give him that role on game day, especially when they have someone on the practice squad. But they believed he could do it. So, yes, it's very easy to criticize, but I just thought it was worth us kind of breaking down exactly what happened there, because that was a game-defining moment.
No doubt. I think if, again, you're looking for something positive moving forward here, this is the benefit of having the expanded practice squad, is you're able to keep a long snapper. You're never keeping
a punter.
Long snapper and a punter. You're never keeping those positions on the old practice squad, but now what is it? It's at
16.
16, up to 16 players you can keep on that. And the old was what, 7, 8?
I think it was 8.
8, yeah. And so you've doubled the size of your practice squad. You're able to have the luxury now of turning someone who is, that's what this they do for a living, and that very specialized position. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one thing to be encouraged by, is like, you don't have to go out there on the scrap heap of the waiver wire and try to pick up somebody who's whatever, not done it forever.
Yep, that's a really good point. So thought that was worth talking about for sure. And then just before we get to the fan questions, lost in all of this, I would just want to hit some of my quick film takeaways. Ja'Marr Chase, yes, we all know he's really good. He was fantastic yesterday, and it's going to get overshadowed because they didn't win, but he carried that offense. He was automatic. He didn't drop a pass. He's been so good during training camp. I think I've maybe seen him drop like one or two passes. He was phenomenal. The touchdown that should have been a touchdown that got called back, we don't even need to spend time talking about that one, but just wanted to give Ja'Marr Chase his love here because he was fantastic yesterday in that game. Tough day for Jonah Williams. Went back and watched that film. And it wasn't that he was going up against TJ or Cam. Alex Highsmith gave Jonah the business all day. And we can talk about that at another time. And I think we need to give Jonah the season to prove what he is. But the Bengals have a very tough decision to make with him because they picked up his fifth-year option this year. And that basically is your prove-it year. He's got to have a good year this year for them to keep him in Cincinnati. But we're not going to make any rash judgments and say, should they or shouldn't they after one game. But not a great game for Jonah, not a great game for Cordell. Very good game for Ja'Marr Chase and Logan Wilson, Sam Hubbard, and Jermaine Pratt. Von Bell, too, had some spectacular games for the Bengals. So let's move on now to fan submitted questions. And Jason and I are hoping that you guys send us your questions every Monday. We would love to treat this like a mailbag and get some of the questions that you have answered, because that's fun for us. And we'd love to be able to provide you guys with the analysis that you want. So let's hit it, Jason. Let's do some rapid fire questions
here. Real quick. It's at Kelsey L. Conway on Twitter, and it's at J. Williams Cincy with a Y on Twitter. So hit us up there.
Yes. All right. From Zach Holden, how much did we underestimate coming back from an emergency appendectomy? He's referring to Joe Burrow. How many of those throws could be attributed to Burrow thinking he had more power but not quite being healing on track? I will answer it quickly. The appendectomy had nothing to do with Joe Burrow's interceptions yesterday. He said it. Zach Taylor said it. I watched the film. He just made some bad decisions on two. Of the four interceptions, two were just terrible decisions by him. The third one with TJ Watt, great play by Watt. The fourth one, I believe it was just it was another situation where a Steelers DB just made a really good play. I don't remember his number, but no question, the first and fourth interception, just bad throws by Burrow, bad decisions. He feels fine. The ball was coming off his hands fine.
And go ahead.
And if you look at the way he was able to hit Chase and TB in the second half, like, you can't blame the appendectomy on the interceptions, but then say it's okay for the throws that he did made that were completions. So the appendectomy had nothing to do with his actual throwing ability. You could argue that the missed time did have something to do with it. So I'll let you.
And that's what I'm saying. I'm going to somewhat disagree, but not fully disagree, because, right, the missed time put him back. And I point this out in my column that what would have been wrong with having him get in there for a series against the Rams in that final preseason game? And so did all of that. Again, he comes back in mid-August. So he comes back with still plenty of time left in the preseason. But how much of that kind of lack of preparation time, play into some of the timing issues and some of the just not being fully ready to play? Was his arm plenty strong enough? Sure. All you can do on an injury is take the player's word for it or whatever, which, sometimes can be in question. But I think, Joe Burrow says he feels fine, then all you can do is take his word for it. But Joe Burrow lost weight. We don't know how much that was. It was an undisclosed amount of weight. And I think that's a legitimate question to ask. I don't know if we can have a fully know the answer to it, because – injuries are always a little weird. And this is I'll point this out, and I said this somewhere in a column or whatever, is that through my years of covering sports, one of my mentors in this business taught me, like, never downplay injuries, that the team typically is always going to tell you everything is okay. And maybe everything was okay here. But you always have to be a little bit concerned about it. And I think that was a good question. That's a roundabout way of saying I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good way to answer it. Another question that was submitted was about why didn't they go for it on third down in overtime? We just went over that. Mm-hmm. And this wasn't really a question. It was just offensive line woes continue, red zone inefficiencies continue, opting not to review the Chase TD. Matt Woolman, we hear you. We see you. We thought the same things. We do think the same things. We had the same questions. All you can do at this point is give the Bengals a longer time to prove who they are going to be. They're not going to be the same team in week one as they are in week 13. And just a reminder, the Bengals did not hit their stride until the month of December. When they lost to the New York Jets in October, I seriously questioned if this team was good enough to make the playoffs. They flipped the switch, so let's not overreact, but totally fair to say the offensive line woes continuing and the red zone inefficiencies are disappointing considering the hype about all of that this offseason. Andy Murray asked Higgins and Harris update for week two. I will be able to give you guys an update on those two specific players after I talk to Zach Taylor at 3 o'clock. He speaks to the media at three. I will have a story breaking down injuries, what Zach Taylor said after the game, all of it on Cincinnati.com. So check back then and I will be able to have an update there. But I did ask about T. Higgins and it doesn't sound like it's a very severe concussion. I think he's going to be okay.
Back for week three.
He can still make it back depending on the severity of the
Dallas game.
For the concussion, yeah.
Okay.
What is the main area? This is a great one. What is the main area of concern which needs to get corrected before Dallas? Did you watch the game against the Bucs last night? Cowboys versus Bucs?
I didn't watch it. I saw the stats. And
the biggest area of concern for me is the Bucs ran all over the Cowboys. Leonard Fournette looked like an all-star.
Yep.
The Bengals have got to be able to run Mixon and run him not for, you know, 3-4 yard gains. Like, they've got to be able to ride him for 20 plus, those explosive runs that we need to see from him, because Dallas, their best weapon on defense is Micah Parsons and Trayvon Diggs, and those two both are fantastic at turning the ball over, whether it's Trayvon, you know, in the backfield, just being able to read and pick off quarterbacks, or Micah Parsons getting to the quarterback, and whether it be forcing fumbles, sacks, those two guys are the heart and soul of their defense. And when you look at what went wrong for the Bengals offense, turnovers, Burrow can't let Diggs have a day picking him off. And the offensive line's got to have a really good plan for Micah Parsons because they use him in a lot of different ways that sometimes give some teams some fits. So that's my biggest area of concern. But I will say, now with Dak Prescott not playing, I picked the Bengals to lose in Dallas. I'm reversing my pick. They should win in Dallas on Sunday. But what is your biggest area of concern?
Well, certainly it's the same thing, the takeaways. The Cowboys led the NFL in takeaways last year.
Yep.
They had four sacks on Tom Brady last night. That offense is, they score 3 points. They gave up a lot, like you said, 127 yards rushing on the ground. So I'm sticking with my pick that Dallas wins this game. So far,
even maybe like Cooper Rush at quarterback.
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
Because until this offensive line and can prove otherwise, Dallas's defense is really good, and this is a team coming off 5 turnovers and 7 sacks, and that was a disaster yesterday here in Cincinnati. Yeah, they're going up against – well, let me ask you this real quick. Is this as good of a defense as the Steelers? I think it's better, right? It doesn't quite have
I would say Dallas is better overall.
Yes. But you don't have the top line star power.
Yeah, of a but Cam they've Hayward got better linebackers. They give each other a run for my Steelers defense is really good, but yeah, Dallas is a really good defense.
But on the road and
All right. So Jason and I are also gonna get way more into the Dallas Cincinnati preview in our Thursday episode. So we're gonna wrap this podcast up with the final question sent in from Christopher. Bostic, and it is, does Zach Taylor consider giving up play calling duties? It appears it impends his game decision making and management. Guys, we are in we're heading into week two, and we are already doing this.
This is the first game after the Super Bowl, the first real game.
No, Zach Taylor does not need to consider giving up play calling duties. You can't, after one game that doesn't go the Bengals' way, immediately jump back onto this narrative. This narrative was put to bed last year when he took the team to the Super Bowl. Yes, were there some things from a game management standpoint he didn't nail yesterday? Yeah. Does that happen to every coach? Yes. But to think that after week one, I mean, come on, we got to give people some time. Everybody just needs to relax. The Bengals are going to be okay. I think they are a very good team. It was week one. A team is never as good as they're going to be on week one as they are going to be in week 14, 15. So to answer your question, no, Zach Taylor does not need to consider giving up play calling duties because he does a really good job with it.
I think that's one of his strengths. Yes. To be honest with you.
He's a really good offensive minded head coach. So yes. Let's just pump the brakes, people.
Well said. I think it's a good point to end on, right?
Yeah, that's great. As always, Jason and I love your feedback. And as I mentioned, we will be back on Thursday to really break down the Cowboys.
Will I change my pick between now and then?
Probably. Come on, Cooper Rush.
Can I reserve the right to change my mind?
Yeah, I mean, I changed it. It's our podcast, so we can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
But as always, we appreciate you guys tuning in. Love hearing back from you. And we will talk to you guys on Thursday.